Well, hi, hello, and how are you, and welcome to Soapbox Radio for, I believe it is, November the 11th. It's always a little hard to keep track because we do record these shows in advance still. The station is still physically closed and then get them to you. This is a very timely show. You're going to hear in a moment Amy Amanti interviewing Sean Kirkpatrick about the Lonestone GPS system. Helps people who are sight impaired navigate. And Christy Cassie has written a really interesting book and a really interesting interview. I should say this is our first show where I'm going to mention the election, which is now over. You'll notice that we haven't really been mentioning the election here in British Columbia very much during these shows. And that's because, frankly, the issues that our listeners are interested in never seem to come up. A little bit more about that maybe at the end of the show, but right now here is Amy Amanti and two really fascinating interviews on Soapbox Radio on CFRO-FM 100.5, live streaming www.cooperadio.org, and here is Amy.
Welcome, everybody, to today's show. Today we've got with us Sean Kirkpatrick, who's the creator and developer of Lodestone GPS, an app designed for navigation for people who are blind and partially sighted. So we're going to get into a great conversation with Sean, and then we're going to reach out to Christy Cassie, who's a published creative writer and an English teacher. We'll check in with her and see how things are going now that we're sort of back to school, whatever that looks like. So before we get into visiting with Christy, I'm going to welcome Sean Kirkpatrick to the show. Sean, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. It's always a special treat when people take time out of their busy lives to share with us what's going on.
Well, no problem.
So let's pretend that I don't know anything about Lodestone GPS. I would love it if you would just start from the basics. What is Lodestone, and how did it birth into being?
Okay, well, Lodestone is an accessible GPS application for the blind and visually impaired, and it's mainly designed for people using speech. So there's no fancy graphics, no, like, you know, pictures or anything like that. It's all text-based. And the current version, it actually runs on the iPhone, so it's primarily designed for voiceover users, but other users could use it as well. And it gives you your basics. It has your, you know, you can explore your neighborhood and find points around you. You can get turn-by-turn directions, so planning routes and saving favorite points and all of that stuff. There's also a version that I'm working on currently for Android, but that hasn't been released yet.
That sounds like it's an app that can be really beneficial in a person's life, especially those of us who don't see the environment around us and want to know, you know, where the closest coffee shop is, without naming the big coffee shop brands. Is your app available to help people find things like that?
Yeah, you can do a search on, if you know the name of something, for example, you can do a point search, and you can get directions, so turn-by-turn routing and that type of thing. So yeah, it has all the things that the normal GPS application will do, except it's text-based.
So specifically designed to use with screen reading software. That makes sense,
exactly.
Considering the demographic that you're creating it for. And Sean, you come by this naturally because you yourself are blind. And so what were some of the barriers in learning how to develop and create an app? Is that something you knew before this idea came to you? Or talk a little bit about your progression in the tech world.
Okay, I've basically been a computer programmer, so I am actually a trained programmer. I went to BCIT. I graduated in, 92-ish now? So a fair bit back. So I've been into computers a long time. So I've been programming everything almost. And then in 2004, a friend of mine proposed that we build a GPS system of some sort. So we weren't really sure if that was going to be modifying, let's say, a portable handheld unit with a speech synthesizer. But then the Nokia smartphones came out with talks, so that let them speak. So we're like, okay, if people are carrying a smartphone, we could write an app that would run on that. And if you had an external GPS receiver at the time, you could, you'd have a nice portable GPS system. So that was where the original version of this started, on the old Nokia phones, the Series 60. And that one was actually a freeware application. So we had And at the time, there was only one or two other ones, like the Trekker was out, for example, and that was $2,400 or something. So we had that option, and then we had Lodestone, which was at the free end. So naturally, a lot of people liked the free side of things. So we had a lot of users, about 7,000 users at the height there when the Nokia version was out. And then
that's a huge amount of users.
Yes, it was. It's funny how many users you get when it's free. And then around 20, I'm thinking the dates here, about 2012 or so, Nokia dropped support for all the Series 60. I think they were being bought out by Microsoft at that point. And so all the support basically died. So we couldn't release any newer versions anymore. And that platform kind of died out. And then the iPhone was starting to come up. So everyone's having to convert over from a phone with tactile keys to the touch screen, and Apple did a good job with VoiceOver of making that accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2015 or so, I started working on the app for the iPhone. So then the iOS version was released in 2017. And unfortunately, it had to go to a pay model at that point, because with anything Apple involved, you kind of have to pay to play. So something had to pay the bills. And
right.
So it has a few less users than 7,000 now, because obviously when you make something pay, it kind of limits your user base a little bit.
And so what is the fee that people are looking at it to download this app?
Right now it's $10.99 Canadian. So that obviously translates into other amounts depending on your country. I don't know what that translates into US these days.
Yeah, of course. I know. It's craziness. And that's one of the things we didn't actually touch on, which is whether or not this app can be used throughout the world. So talk a little bit about how the application is, you know, if I'm going to travel to Italy, for example, not anytime soon, but eventually I might go back. How can I use Lodestone GPS to help me with my travels?
Well, it is worldwide, and it is available worldwide on the App Store. It actually is in multi-languages. I have a team of volunteer language translators that actually translates it into, we have 8 or 10 languages now, and hopefully getting more in the future as things progress. But the database of points that Lodestone uses is actually global. So it will work anywhere in the world that you choose to go.
So how does that work, Sean? Because I'm not a techie, so to speak, in terms of, like, I use tech every day and I understand what it is that I'm using. But in terms of, you know, the creation and the development and the skill that goes behind the scenes into creating this stuff, how is it, you know, who created this, like, global map, so to speak, this database that you're tapping into? I that seems so foreign to me, and I'd love it if you could just unpack how that works.
Okay, back in 2004, we had a problem with the original Lodestone of not really any publicly available mapping data, because all of this was pretty new, and any GPS systems that were existing were commercial. So, you know, there was things like TomTom and NavTech and that type of thing out, but they were all commercial, and of course their databases were commercial, and you would have to pay mega fees to access them. So what we had to have our users do in the original version of Lodestone was create their own data and then share it with us. So we created something called the Point Share Exchange. So if users entered in data about their area, they could upload it to the Point Share Exchange, and the next time someone downloaded in that area, they would have some information to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And as now that time has progressed, we have things like we have a lot more open data now. Cities have started opening up their mapping data and making it all available. And we also have a project called OpenStreetMap, which is a huge database of global points from everywhere. And that's a crowdsourced database.
Right.
And that's where now we've renamed PointShare Exchange to PointShare. And that's where it's getting most of its information from now, is
so
the OpenStreetMap project.
So does that mean that anybody who develops a GPS app or, you know, anything similar can have access to the same kind of worldwide database?
Yeah, there is actually many, many things access OpenStreetMap under the hood. There's a lot of the applications that you might download on the phone, anything to do with GPS and that, a lot of them do actually access OpenStreetMap now, since it is a free database of points. And so what Lodestone does is it takes this entire database and sucks it into its own system and combines it with other data. So I've combined it with other city data and transit data, and users can also share their points as well. So the same as the old system worked. So it's a combination of all of these points. So now we're almost, it's almost to the point where there's too much data instead of not enough anymore.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I hate to laugh at that, but like, it's like, you know, the problem of having too much money. You know what I mean? It's like, sometimes it's a good problem to have. But it sounds like if I was traveling.
You can never have too much money, but you can have too much data. It's actually one of the recent projects lately in the last few weeks is building a new point share server because the database was rapidly outgrowing the old one. So I built a completely dedicated server for this, so it's going to be able to hold more and more information and go much, much faster than the current system.
So this is going to be a stupid question then. What have you been doing during isolation, Sean?
Well, there's been the development of the Android version, because I started that in about February or so. I started working on that, getting into Android, because that's the other half of the user base. There's iPhone or there's Android, and you know I'd want to be all on both. Mm-hmm. So I've been working on that project, and then of course there's been over the last couple of weeks I've been rebuilding this point share server. So that started from a whole new computer, and you know, reloading the database and upgrading things and all of that. And then of course being over at Christie's all the time, I've been upgrading her house and various electronic projects and you know all that kind of thing.
You're gonna turn her home into a smart home, one gadget at a time.
We've already done that. It's now a smart home. Most of the things are automated. She can yell at things, and they either will or won't work. But, you know, the summer project was upgrading the patio, and since it was hot, and installing a ceiling fan in the dining room and putting electrical outlets out on the patio to power all of our gear. And, yeah, so, you know, there's been a lot to do.
So you're not only the creator and developer of this Lodestone app, you're also a bit of a jack of all trades, because I think, and you know, this wasn't planned to be part of our conversation today, but since we're talking a bit about what we've been doing in isolation, I also know that you and Christy, who's going to join us in a little bit to update us on some stuff, have also been doing like little YouTube review type videos.
Yeah, I should kind of let that go by the wayside, but I think I should do a few more of them. Yeah, there's so many, we get busy, it's like, okay, what do we do today? Do we, when Christy doesn't have me hauling hundreds of pounds of rocks for her landscaping project, or, you know, there isn't something to needing rewiring on the patio, or some other project that I've come up with for myself. It's like being in isolation, there's now almost too much to do, strangely.
I agree. I have found myself, too, to be overwhelmed with projects, and I didn't expect that at all. I actually kind of thought that there'd be time to just breathe a little bit, but it turns out that a lot of organizations and a lot of companies have switched to a virtual platform fairly quickly and easily, and so now they're like looking for staff or looking for, you know, people to take workshops or whatever, so... You're right. We're not shy for choice. We're not spoiled for choice.
No, it's funny to hear like a lot of people say, "Oh, yeah, and all this time they've had lots of time to binge watch Netflix and things, and I can't for the life of me find time in my day to watch anything." There's actually stuff I've been wanting to see and haven't found the time.
Well, I have to say, lucky for me, I get paid to watch Netflix because I do a weekly movie review television review. So I actually get to like tell myself it's time to watch some Netflix or whatever streaming platform I choose to, you know, review the newest project on. So, I don't get a lot of viewing time strictly for pleasure. Although it is the best way of being able to combine work and pleasure.
The other unfortunate problem here was since we've had really nice weather and me and Christy have created our own, basically on her patio, our own little parklet, it's really hypnotic. All you want to do is stay outside, and it really does slow down the development of projects because you just want to be outside enjoying the nice weather. Because we know soon enough there is going to be months of cold and rainy weather where we're going to be inside. So it's kind of slowed down the development project a little bit.
That's going to make a difference. I'm wondering... I know that you've been working a lot on Lodestone, on sort of ramping it up to be ready for the Android platform. Any idea when that might be available?
I don't know. It was before the nice weather hit. It was actually running along at a pretty rapid pace, but I don't actually know at this point. I'm going to have to. There's a lot to do on it, of course, and then there'll be the beta testing phase, and that usually takes a little longer. Right. So I'm hoping by the end of the year, but I really couldn't say. Because, well, of course, I'm kind of bad at planning deadlines because I always want to do something else before the release comes out. It's like, okay, I want this to be perfect instead of, you know, I don't want to be releasing a program that doesn't work properly and then having to do updates over and over and over again.
Right. You'd rather do all the work on the front end than the back end.
Yeah, I'd rather have it come out like when the Android version comes out, it'll be ready to go. Actually, it does have the benefit of, with the Android version, I now know what the program is supposed to look like and what it's supposed to do, so it's actually quite easy. Because right. with the iOS version, I was basically redesigning from the ground up and wasn't exactly sure what certain parts of it would look like or how they would work. But now that the iOS version is matured, I'm just basically copying it for Android.
And is that a difficult, like, are the platforms so vastly different from each other that takes a lot of, you know, brain power to do, or what's the story behind that?
Well, from the user's perspective, the platforms aren't that much different. I mean, there are differences, of course, but they're all, you know, they do the same thing. They have touch screen interfaces and all that, so you would think they would be the same, but in reality, for writing an app like Lodestone, it's actually in two different languages. So now, for the Android version, this is my third rewrite of the app. Because on the Nokia phones, it was in one language. And on the iPhone, it's in another language. And on Android phones, it's in yet another language.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically having to be rewritten from the ground up. And learning all the idiosyncrasies of each operating system.
And do these companies do that on purpose? Like, is that somehow strategic that you know, iOS is so different?
You know, I would like to think there's some big evil conspiracy plot, but I don't know if that is. I think people get, at least on iPhone, Apple dictates the course of the action. They're pretty control freakish that way. And if they say you're going to be using Swift as the programming language to write your app, well, that's what you're going to do, whether you want to or not. Because it's funny, all these languages are, if you can read one, you can probably read and write the other one. But they're different enough that it's not quite compatible.
Right.
And and everything has their own way of doing things. And I guess there is something, you know, the companies do like to be a little proprietary. Like Google runs Android, so they like to do things their own. Oh, I think I just triggered half the Googles in the house when I said that.
Sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, that's what happens when we work from home. We tend to Google, or to Google, to trigger Lady A or Monsieur G or whatever.
Yes.
Let me backtrack a little bit, Sean, because, you know, you're such a wealth of technical information. And I know that we get some listeners who are interested in things like accessible websites.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, just actually thought about it in this moment, since we have a tech expert on the line with us. I wonder if you can share any of your top tips for accessibility. And I'm talking mostly screen reader accessibility, because we're really far behind in that department. But, you know, if somebody is looking at their, you know, generic retail type website, what are some of the low hanging fruit, the easy things that they can do to make it accessible?
Well, and this is one of the things I plan on doing on my reviews. I plan on blasting some of these companies for doing these stupid things.
Right.
But the primary thing that companies could do to make their sites accessible is label things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of going button, 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 you know, when you want to have a form. Like, I was on the Best Buy site the other day because they asked, you know, give feedback on your recent purchase. And I'm like, I would love to, except all the star rating buttons just say button.
Right.
And then of course, you know, I put in the, like, I pressed what I thought was the star rating I wanted and then put in my, like, review text and went submit. And it goes, an unexpected error has occurred. I'm like, were you expecting? Was there an expected error here? Like, what was going on? It's things like that that really bug me. It's something that's so simple. And even on the, I've noticed this happening a lot on the iPhone lately with apps. You get a lot of applications that people have not put in the accessibility labels on the button. So you're just going along on the screen, and there's like button, and then the operating system's trying to guess. It says, you know, button, possibly back. I was like, well, okay, you could label that, and it wouldn't be possibly anymore. You'd know for sure.
Right.
Yeah, and it seems like that's happening a lot. Like, people just aren't taking the time to put in the most basic of accessibility things.
Yeah.
And I wish companies like Apple, who have a review process, like, your app doesn't get approved until they review it. Like, Lodestone actually got denied release last time because it didn't have proper pictures for the iPad.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote the Apple and told them that this was ridiculous, and that they created the problem in the first place, so I'd like them if they reapproved the app, please, and they actually did. Bending Apple to my will is fun. I've done it twice now.
Well, see, then you're not just a tech wizard. You're a wizard in general. But it's interesting.
Well, what I found interesting was Apple had another problem where they keep renewing the developer agreement every few months or so. They keep making changes and things. And what it used to do was you would try to review, at least I would try with speech to review this agreement, and it would cause the whole browser to freeze. And the only way out was to basically reboot the computer and do this on my phone, which meant scrolling through 400 pages of agreement on an iPhone, which takes a while. And so I'd had enough one day, and I wrote back to Apple and I said, you know, as a developer, I find that the fact that this is happening to be extremely abusive, and I pay for this service, and I'm not going to tolerate it. If this continues, I'm going to file a human rights complaint. And by the way, you might want to, instead of having this huge agreement pop up that nobody can humanly read, maybe just give a summary of the changes you've made. And strangely enough, the next time they updated this agreement, the problem was fixed, and they implemented the changes feature. It actually did pop up with a screen that just said what their changes were rather than the whole license agreement.
You know, that's a whole other interesting topic when you think about the fact that every time you download an app, there's a license agreement from the user's perspective.
Yes.
I don't think anybody has ever read a user's agreement a day in their life. And if they had, it was like they read it once the first time they ever saw it, and then just automatically went to I agree or I accept, not knowing that, you know, now whoever's app has total control over your phone and all your data and all your, and that's where all the conspiracy theories come in about.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, who's listening? And if I need a new refrigerator, all of a sudden my email browser pops up and says, oh, refrigerator's for sale, you know? Who's listening?
You know. Well, the nice thing that is about Lodestone, when the user downloads it, there is no license agreement for you to agree to because, well, it's not that complicated. I'm not collecting user data. I don't actually care what the user data is.
Yeah.
The only thing they do have to do is register an account on PointShare, and the only reason for that is so that if they create unique points, they have control over whether or not they are shared with the rest of the world.
Right.
So there's no complicated user agreements, and there's no, I like the experience to be as smooth as possible. So, you know, you download the app and there's dialogues popping up, you know, let's say, you know, rate this app or new in this version or, you know, all the other things that can pop up on apps these days.
And I absolutely appreciate that. You have no idea how much easier it is as a user to not have to go through the whole reading of the license agreement. And there have been some apps over the years that I have rethought. You know, the license agreement pops up and I think to myself, you know what, do I really need to play this game? Probably not.
Yeah, and you have to wonder why it keeps changing, or we've updated our privacy policy, or, you know, there's various other things. It's like Lodestone, it actually on its website does have a basic privacy policy and a usage, like terms of use policy in case anyone wants to read them. But it doesn't actually force anyone to. You don't have to have I agrees or this, that, and the other thing. I like my user experiences to be really streamlined. So the thing with Lodestone is there's a lot of power under the hood, but it doesn't really get in your way. I like to think of it as a Swiss Army knife of GPS applications because there's a lot of features and functions and configuration, but it tries not to get in the way of what you're actually trying to do.
Well, this has been fascinating, and I hope that anybody within the sound of our voice checks out both the Lodestone website and downloads the app on their iOS device. So, yeah. Sean, to that end, why don't you tell us where we can find Lodestone out in the World Wide Web?
All right. The site is www.lodestone-gps.com, and that's Lodestone. It's a modern spelling for an old word. That's a story I'm sticking with for that, why it's spelled out. Not that there was a spelling mistake made when it was originally registered. No, that didn't. That never happened. No. So, and on that page, we have everything. You can actually, you know, there's our Facebook links and the Twitter feed and all of that. And you can also read the documentation of the app before purchase, so you can decide, you know, if it's for you. Because sometimes people will purchase the app and say, hey, this doesn't do X, Y, or Z that I thought it did. And it's like, yeah, you can read the docs before buying.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yeah, so it has all the links and the information, and we're updating it. Christy actually runs the website for me. She's in charge of putting up the updates and stuff. She's the web mistress.
And so where do we find, are you just available in the iOS, the App Store as well?
Yeah, it's available on the App Store. You just look up Lodestone GPS and it pops up. And on the site, it also has a link to that as well.
Awesome. Well, you know, it's been great learning about Lodestone and about some interesting techie tips, which I always love. And I know that we're going to bring you back on for an update at some point when you're ready to talk about the Android version. So listeners don't have to worry about missing out on that, but they can also find you on the website, because that will be updated there too, I'm sure.
Yes, it will. I was actually hoping that to have the update, the Android version ready for next year's White Cane Week, if we do such a thing, but with things being the way they are, who knows if that's going forward. So
everything is in limbo at this very moment, my friend. So I definitely will be letting people know, as you know, maybe some of our listeners don't know, that I organized the White Cane Week here in it's for the Metro Vancouver area, but I do it in my own community because that's where I live. It's the biggest one in all of British Columbia. So we bring together between 20, 25 organizations that provide services and resources and all things sort of related to living with blindness or partial sight. So, and Lodestone has been at the last several of them. So
yeah, the last two. So yeah. And people do seem to be pretty interested when they stop by. And so, you know, and every year, of course, as we get better, you know, we have more and more screens sitting on the table. So it makes it more interesting. So, you know, if they do it this year, well, we'll have Android screens up and running, hopefully. So,
well, fingers crossed, we'll be able to, you know, have crowds of that size. But, you know, it's such a funny thing when I think about all the organizations, for example, that would have had fundraisers this year and didn't. And are they going to do them next year? And next year's also in limbo. And just because I might want to put on White Cane Week doesn't mean that the venue that I want to do it at is going to allow it. So going to be, or not only that, there's also a whole new rule with insurance coverage. Because I have to get insurance to hold this event. And so now insurance coverages aren't covering people who get sick.
No, I would imagine
with coronavirus.
Not.
Yeah, it's too much of a risk. So that's the other thing is, you know, if your venue says to you, hey, you need insurance, you need COVID coverage kind of idea, and you can't get that, well, then, you know, you can't have your event. So we'll just have to wait and see. Fingers crossed. Yeah. Obviously, but we'll have to wait and see what happens.
That's been one little hiccup for the whole Lodestone project, actually. At the height of the lockdown, when everything was kind of, no one was going anywhere doing anything, the sales dropped off, of course, because no one was traveling.
Right.
So, you know, that's a disadvantage of making a travel app. So people should, they should buy Lodestone and learn it while they're isolated. And that way they'll be able to go out and travel more effectively when we're all allowed to run around and do whatever we want.
Ah, that's a great tip, Sean. I love it.
It is starting to pick up again, at least the sales in Europe and stuff are starting to pick up now. So it's not too bad.
Well, we're going to transition into bringing Christy Cassie on board, which I know I refer to you and Christy as the superpower couple. and our listeners, of course, have sort of had an inside, I guess, a fly on the wall view of this conversation where they're like, wait a second, do they maybe live in the same house? I don't know. Why is he hauling rocks? So we're going to get into some of that in just a minute, because I love that you guys are this power couple. But
Christy's actually been quiet this whole interview. I don't know what happened. Maybe she's
She's letting you have your moment, Sean, and we're going to let her have her moment right now. So welcome to Christy Cassie. She's a published creative writer and an English teacher. So welcome, Christy. Glad that you're joining us from the seat next to Sean on the couch.
Thank you. It's been killing me to be quiet.
I'm sure. But I appreciate, as you guys know, because you are both in a tech space, sometimes the complication with these Zoom platforms is the fact that we want to chat over each other, and that can be difficult to hear. So I too have, you know, have a difficult time chewing my tongue when I think I have a question, but we just make the best of it. So Christy, let's start with the first chunk, which is a published creative writer. I love that. I'm familiar with your work, but why don't you share with our listeners what kind of work you do?
Well, I've been writing since I was a kid. Probably because I grew up in the Caribbean and they didn't know what to do with me because blind kids don't go to school in Trinidad and Tobago. They still don't, unless they have their dedicated caregiver. But I just found writing. I was always good at it. And I placed first in the Commonwealth when I was 9 years old. You know, I beat out all the Canadians even back in the day in this essay writing competition. Writing's always been my thing. As I grew older, I mean, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. So that, you know, I chose to be a teacher because a starving writer doesn't really pay the bills.
Yeah,
so
right.
Writing's always been kind of like my escape. If I want to just, you know, veg out for a bit, I'll write a story or whatever. But in 2016, I was actively involved in an internet writing group with a lot of people who were just getting published online or publishing their own books. And my flash fiction, so stories that are 500 words or less, they were getting really good reviews. And people said, well, why don't you send us out for publishing? I'm like, who would want to read my stuff? Like, what? And I got my first story published on my birthday, January 16th, 2017. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got my first story published, and I thought, hey, I guess I'm good at this. I guess actually the bigger world is interested. So I started out with that, getting published in small online magazines. And then I thought, okay, I have all these stories about the first love of my life, that beautiful first, you know, I'm going to marry this guy kind of relationship. I was so young. I was 20. I thought he was Prince Charming. And he's the reason I moved to Vancouver, because I was living in Toronto at the time, and he was living in Vancouver. And he said, I'll never move to Toronto, so something has to be done. So I moved to Vancouver in 2003. And, 5 years later, he dumped me. It was literally my whole 20s. And I thought, I want to put this all down because I had all these pieces. So that led to a book called Brogan Bites. I self-published it on Amazon in 2017. It's a collection of short stories and poetry. And it's the rise and fall of this relationship. The guy's name is changed, but if you know him and his grandfather's last name, you will know who it is. And it just set me on this thing. Like, I have a second memoir planned, and it's been going really slow because I got involved in other things. But I figure, because a lot of writers, they'll do their stories, they'll become famous, and then they'll do their tell-all stories. And I'm kind of doing it backwards. I want all my baggage out, and then I have some fiction novels planned, so... It's pretty cool. Like, I love writing. I love creating characters, and I have an excellent memory, so I will remember. If you tell me something, I will remember it, much to my ex's disappointment and the scrunt woman. I was actually dumped on my 20th birthday, and I put that story first in my book. And the guy, he goes, what, like, my one ex said, he goes, why did you do that? I go, I remember telling you on my 20th birthday that this will end up in writing. So why are you surprised?
Promise fulfilled, right?
Yeah. So anyway, writing, Christy, is my thing.
Yeah, I love that writing is your like go-to thing. Talk to me a bit about how you self-publish, because you mentioned you're self-published on Amazon. And at the end of this interview, we will remind people of how to find your book, Brogan Bites, and some other things. So we'll get to that. So everybody have your pens or your recording devices handy for some additional information. But tell us about the process of self-publishing, because I think people may be kind of terrified by that.
Yeah, well, you know, when people think of publishing, they think of, like, you can go the big route, right, where you pay a publisher. A publisher comes to you and organizes the whole thing, but it takes a lot of investment. And as a person with a disability, I don't have that investment.
Yes.
So when I put out a, you know, when people are saying, oh, get your book published, I asked on my writer's group, I said, well, okay, this is my situation, like, what do I do? And they said, oh, Amazon, you can self-publish through Amazon. I'm like, what? So I went and looked it up, and what it is you can, Amazon will take a cut of your, and basically, if you self-publish, everything's up to you, your cover, editing. So that's what you lose, I guess, by not having a mainstream publisher who will assign you an editor, get your artistic cover. Like, everything's up to you. It literally is self-publishing. But it's really rewarding because in the end, you're like, hey, I did this all myself. And Amazon, you can get your book in Kindle format or in paperback. And what they do with paperback is they'll print it. It's print on demand. So if somebody orders a paperback, they'll just print it and send it to that person. So I don't have to store print copies in my one bedroom apartment, you know, between Sean's tech servers. So it's actually pretty cool. I would really like to get it in audio format, but that costs, because I don't just want a reader. I want a performer.
Yeah.
I'm used to good audiobooks, and I just want people to, because I hear the characters' voices in my head, and I just don't want a reader.
Yeah.
And I'm a horrible reader. I don't want to read my own book. So so right now it's available in Kindle and paperback. If you want the paperback, you have to order through the U.S. site, because apparently there's no Amazon printing press in Canada. I'm not sure why. There's one in Brazil, but there's not one in Canada. So you have to order it through the U.S. site if you want the paperback, but you can get it through Amazon.ca if you want it on Kindle.
All right. Good to know. And again, I'll get you to recap that sort of at the end so that it's fresh.
It isn't the most visually accessible process, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that, to be honest, because as we know, a lot of these websites that sell stuff are not all that accessible.
Well, it's just that. And if people figure, if you're designing cover art, well, of course you can see.
Yes,
right?
Of course.
So you can see the grid lines you're supposed to stick this little photo in.
Yeah.
So they don't think about, oh, a blind person might be trying to do this.
Yeah. I know, so, if I had to publish a book, the cover page would just be like a, you know, like a single text cover that says something like,
I
am blind.
You know? I was almost in tears because I could see the grid lines and I had my graphic, but I couldn't figure out how to drag and change it.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, the only way, because I don't have a sighted fairy god person nearby, the only way would to give my personal information to, let's say, I don't know, my brother or some volunteer, and they have to log in as me and then do it. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that.
Giving away all your privacy. Yeah.
Yeah. So I managed to make it work. But now that I, like, there's so many changes. Like, I'm thinking if I get my second book up and running, I'll do a re-release of the first one and make sure somebody sighted or with better artistic, like, perspective than me kind of looks at it for me first. And I hate saying that because I want to do everything myself.
Yeah, I know. It's you and I are cut from the same cloth in that regard. But it took me a long time, actually, to be okay with asking for help. And what I learned, Christy, and you know, this is just sort of an aside, is, and my great example is always the ketchup in the grocery store. Even sighted people ask where the ketchup is, right? So there are people that have eyesight, full eyesight, that still suck at graphics.
Yeah.
And are going to say, I need another pair of eyes to look at this. So when I think about that, I think about, okay, it's not such a big deal for me to say I need help with X, Y, Z.
Well, I mean, I think of what I tell my students, and I really should follow my own advice, is that not everybody's good at everything. So yeah. I'm good at putting words down on paper.
Yeah.
I see it like a painting, but I can't paint. Like, it'll take me days to paint something that I can put down in words in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So everybody has their own skill set, and I think I need to learn to take my own advice. It doesn't mean I'm not good at visual stuff. It just means somebody else can do it a little better and faster than I can, and why not?
Yeah, it's just about getting the expertise from the expert.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all there is to it. And that's a great transition because you just started talking about students. So
yeah.
Let's talk about what you do as an English teacher, because we're just sort of back to school.
Cool.
And what that looks like, and it's going to be different for everybody just about.
It's
so
really
talk about that.
One. Yeah, so well, what I'm finding out right now with the school system is to accommodate all this physical distancing and to manage the numbers in the classrooms and that courses in a lot of schools are taking on a 10-week module. So every 10 weeks you have 2 courses instead of having all 5 of your courses in 1 semester.
Right.
So in one, like for nerds like me, 10 weeks of English would be, oh, yeah, give me English, French, Spanish in 10 weeks. This would be my dream.
Yeah.
To the students I have right now, it's their worst nightmare. They were hoping that English would come up a little later in their cycle so that I could kind of work with them. So when they were, you know, when it came up, they'd be a little better prepared. But bingo, they got their schedules today, and they both have English first cycle. So, yeah, so that's going to be a challenge for students. One, I mean, it's going to be more intense. You have 2 courses, so basically it's like 1 course on one day, 1 course on the other day. So in one respect, you have school only half day, yay, but you only have 10 weeks to do this course.
Right.
So, yeah, a lot of students come to me with writing because essays are everybody's nightmare, and it's my dream. And I'm finding out that a lot of people, like, they miss the basic steps, and they don't realize they did. Like, back in maybe grade 5 when you were learning to write paragraphs, maybe you slipped up and you didn't get it. And now you're getting into grade 10, and it's harder, and it's hard to...
Yeah.
Gather that again, because now you know you have to go from 1-pagers to 5-pager essays, and how do you do that when you never got the 1-pager essay?
Right.
So it's kind of interesting to me and eye-opening, and I mean I love it. It drives me nuts because I'm trained in teaching adults. So teaching teenagers is a little out of my comfort zone because they need so much more motivation. And I get frustrated by their monotone answers, but then I have to remember they're only teenagers, so maybe that's all they know.
Right.
But sometimes, you know, when I go, well, what did you do this weekend? I don't know. Nothing.
Yeah.
Seriously? Really? So I finally had a breakthrough yesterday, and I felt so happy after 3 hours of working with these twins, where I got them engaged because one loves drama. She loves being in the middle of drama. Who dumped who? So I said to her, I said, all right, you're going to write me a personal essay on why do people like to be in the middle of drama?
Mm.
You know, and we started talking about, you know, this guy who got rejected by this girl, and I'm like, okay, so why do you care? And she goes, well, I rejected him first. I'm like, well, cool, so let's write about that. And all of a sudden, she's like, okay, I want to write an essay. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, all right. So this is my gift, I think, is that Sean calls me Christopedia. I seem to know a little about everything from soccer and Ferraris to why, you know, guys don't like girls, I guess. And I can switch. And I don't mind, as long as my students are writing, I don't care.
You don't care what the subject is. Yeah.
I had twin boys who all they'd write about was Power Rangers and WrestleMania. And I'm like, good, fine. I don't mind as long as you're following the paragraph. And their grades improved. And I think that's what, because in school you have to write what they tell you.
Yeah.
And who wants to have a tutor that just goes, okay, so today we're writing about the history of Indonesia. It's like, Really? Why do I care?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're a teenager, because, you know, once you transition to being in post-secondary school, you typically have more of a, I don't even know how to phrase this comment, but it's typically easier for you to force yourself to write about something that you're not interested in.
Well, you because, have a little more life experience, a little more context.
Yeah.
You understand the bigger picture. Like teenagers are really short-sighted.
Yeah.
My girls I'm tutoring right now, all they want to do, they want to study art. So they think they're going to university and they'll get to draw all day. And that's just not, but they don't get it right now. And it's no point belaboring the point because they just don't get it.
Yeah, they don't have the brain capacity to be able to think past today.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're not, their brains aren't developed.
The difficulty with teaching teenagers is I'm so used to adults. Like, I have adult students and I can actually say, man, your accent's really strong today. You haven't been practicing your English, have you? And they'll go, oh, sorry. I'm like, no, but I can tell you that. So, you know, whereas teenagers, you can try some tough love, but sometimes you just have to go, okay, they just don't know or they don't get it.
Yeah. So that's so, it's so interesting to me because, you know, you've had a summer off. As most of us have from teaching and have been in isolation just like everybody else has. And, you know, I asked Sean what he had been doing in isolation, although I knew that a large chunk of that was lodestone. But now I'm going to ask you what you've been doing in isolation, because I think there's been some writing in there. I think you've got a new sort of creative outlet that you want to share. It combines the creative and the physical, I'm going to put it that way. So, all right, Christy, here's the official question for you. What have you been doing during isolation?
Deep breath.
Deep breath.
I've been doing, you know what? The great thing about everything being on Zoom, there's so much available and for free that it's amazing. Like, you can try stuff you didn't think, because you're like, well, I want to pay for this, or I want to travel to this, but is it really worth it? Am I going to like it? And now with Zoom, it's like, well, it's only an hour of my time. I'm sitting here at home. Why didn't I do this? So I've done everything from vegan cooking classes, where, you know, the cooking kit's delivered to you because somebody got a community grant, and, you know, they're going to distribute 25 cooking kits and run a Zoom class. And I'm like, huh, okay, cool. I'll try this. To rock painting, which has been helping me with my coordination issues, to my pride and joy, I actually built a rock garden. And this is me, and this is Sean's influence on me, because I'm, like, he grew up around do-it-yourselfers, I grew up around, oh, we hire people for that.
Right.
Like, we had a gardener and a maid and a painter. Whereas he's like, yeah, and I got the paintbrush out, and, you know, I know what, you know, tools are, and I can fix a car. And I'm like, okay, good for you. I have people. Anyway, so I don't know why I decided I would build a rock garden. Because it involved, my apartment building is horrendous. They don't take care of the grounds. And it's all weeds. Like, it's weeds. And this is where being a person with vision loss comes in handy. I don't see how bad it is. My parents do. Every time they come here, they just go, oh, my God, this place is crap. Like, move, move. And I'm like, okay, it looks green to me. Like, what are you talking about? And when I climbed up, because my apartment was downhill from the sidewalk, so I kind of got up on the hill and said, all right, I'm going to clear this 60-square-foot space of grass, I thought, or, you know, grass with some weeds. It was all weeds. Thorny weeds, like, just got, like, nothing. Like, it was horrible. And I thought, okay, I'm glad I can't see that. Because it's horrible. So I cleared the 60-square width. I started off with my hands, and then I figured, okay, I guess I need some tools. This is a bit much. Because at one point, I couldn't feel my right hand. I twisted it so much, I couldn't feel it. And I'm like, I need a tiller. So I got all that, and it took me 4 days, and 840 pounds of rocks. Well, it took, I guess,
Wait. Before we go into the rocks, because I want to ask this question because we're reminded that this show is right now we're profiling two individuals who live with sight loss. And you're talking about 840 pounds of rocks. And my brain goes to, well, gee, how did you get that many rocks to your house? Because neither one of you are driving a car. So So how does that even happen, Christy Cassie?
Well, the first thing we tried was we tried ordering, because first of all, I've never built a rock garden. So I thought, well, 40 pounds should do it.
Yeah. Seems reasonable.
I got 40 pounds of rocks from Home Depot, and I put it, and it looked like confetti.
Yeah.
Just confetti sprinkled on the ground. I'm like, well, this is not good. To address the driving issue, we thought, okay, we'll just get it delivered. So the second time I tried Home Depot, they didn't have it. I wanted 120 pounds, and they said all their bags were broken, and they couldn't deliver it. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I actually got a landscaping company that delivered for a hefty fee. But I mean, in my view, I did put out a call on Facebook asking for a fairy god deliverer, you know, if somebody had a truck, if they would help me. And I, again, back to the beginning when I was saying I hate asking for help. I hated doing that because I'm thinking I'm putting somebody out of their way and I'm not asking them to lift a feather. I'm asking them to get me 120 pounds of rocks.
Yeah.
So a friend did offer, but then me being me and going, oh, she offered, I'm feeling bad. I just decided to pay the delivery fee.
Yeah.
And I ended up, like, if I knew I needed, it would end up being 840 pounds of rocks. I could have saved myself some of the delivery fee because I ended up having to do it three times.
Right.
But you live, you learn. So now we have this 840 pound rock bed, and I found fencing to put around it. So luckily my do-it-yourselfer Sean put it up with the solar lights. But I think he was just more interested in watching me. Like, he couldn't believe that I would actually go in the dirt and clear this 60 square foot space. And I had lots. I'm a person, like, I was up there bare legs, bare feet. I love dirt. I guess I lived in the tropics. Maybe that's why. Although my mom would shudder because she's a meat freak. I feel proud because I've never done that. As I say, we pay. Well, I grew up, you know, we pay people to do that. Yeah. So, but I mean, hey, low, you know, as I always say, people in my area, like my area is a kind of a working class area and nobody takes care of their space. And I always say it doesn't take money. It takes pride.
Yeah.
And effort.
And some time.
And I wanted to prove that. Like, I just, you don't have to live in squalor just because you live in a working class area. Because I struggle with a lot of mental health issues. And to me, that'll send me in my loop. I'm going, well, I suck. This is my life. Great. And, I mean, as Sean said, we've created this parklet. We started last year. We astroturfed a decades-old stained concrete. And we put up a swing. And I have 30 potted plants. And, I mean, you make your space your space. And you make yourself... you make yourself see the silver lining, and it's not that easy. This is coming from 10 years of me going through counseling.
Yeah.
So I don't want to minimize the mental struggle and say, well, just put up a rock garden and you'll be happy. Because it's not that simple. It really isn't. So anyway, but that's a whole new show.
You've been through the pride of learning to be a do-it-yourselfer, and having a do-it-yourselfer in your company who is already good at it. So it's not like you had to go, oh my gosh, where do I start? You know, you did it together as a team, and now you guys have a place to just like relax and veg out. And
but now I can't get him to move back to his place. This is
well, that is a whole other show, my friend. I think he's called Dr. Phil. No, I'm kidding. it's been It's been just a joy having you both on this show because you're both so uplifting and so fun. And when the pandemic's over, maybe I'll be invited over to have tea in your rock garden because yes. I've only ever been able to see it on Facebook and I enjoy it. And I know how much work that takes to do. And even in my own mind, I think to myself, that's a lot of work. I'd never do that much work.
I watched it happen.
Yeah, exactly. So I have so much pride just from afar, from like witnessing it through Facebook, how amazing it is to just have something that you're proud of in your yard and to be able to enjoy it because really,
gosh,
life is just too darn short. So I'm really happy that both of you have found the silver linings. And I made a promise to you, Christy, that we were going to let our audience know how we find Brogan Bites and your other works and or if they have tutoring opportunities or needs, how they find you. So why don't you share with us right now what those
Okay, so my website is www.christyk.ca, K-R-I-S-T-Y-K.ca. Yes, I like my name. And so do my students because it's easy to remember, christyk.ca. You'll find my many, 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 many hats. You'll find a link to Brogan Bites that leads to the amazon.ca. So that's for your Kindle version. If you do want it in paperback, you have to go to the U.S. version.
Awesome. It's been so great having the both of you to chat with us this afternoon. Take care of yourselves during the rest of this pandemic, whatever that looks like. And we'll check in with both of you as time goes on just to see what the updates are from now and then. So thanks so much
for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, hello, this is Victor. We're about done. I have Christy Cassie's book here, K-R-I-S-T-Y-K-A-S-S-I-E, Christy Cassie, Brogan Bites, B-R-O-G-A-N-B-I-T-E-S. And I think I have time to at least read a poem. This is at the beginning of a relationship of collisions and compromise, September 2002. Somewhere between my spiked lemonade and his pints of cocaine beer, playing late night truth or dare, I had my first shot of rum and passed out in his arms. Between my rice and curry chicken and his potatoes and rare steak, at my parents' house he tasted curried goat and ate three platefuls. Between my hip-hop radio station and his country and western blues, summertime by the pool, he let the pop station play just to see me dance. Between my lines of poetry and his lines of computer code, he wrote the program that we use each night to talk over the internet. Between my university education and his practical work experience, I penciled him in everywhere, in the schedule on the wall of my residence room. Between my romantic babbling and his logical explanations, I want us to be together, right now. No more waiting. That's why he's working, he says. Between hours of long-distance calls and Toronto-Vancouver commutes, we fell in love. And that is from Brogan Bites by Christy Cassie. I wish I had time to read some more. So you've been listening to Amy Amandi, and you should check out Christy Cassie on the internet as well as Lodestone GPS. Very, very useful. Thank you so much for listening today to Soapbox Radio on CFRFM 100.5, broadcasting almost live from downtown Vancouver, www.coopradio.org. Coming up next, I do believe, is still Wax Poetic. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.